Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Daryl Sneath. Each week, we visit with an author from our region, get an introduction to their work, sometimes a glimpse into their lives. We try to find out what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. This week, we are very pleased to have Daryl Sneath with us. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you very much for having me.
Daryl was born in 1975 and raised in Beaverton, Ontario. In 1998, he graduated from the University of Windsor with a BA in English Literature. 4 years later, he earned another degree in education, this time from the University of Ottawa. And to top that off, in 2005, he graduated from Windsor's English Literature and Creative Writing program with an MA. Now he teaches, writes, listens to CBC Radio 2, and has a particular fondness for Canlit and Canadian microbrews. The author bio on the back of his novel All My Sins adds that he was raised in a small town by a lake. Currently, he shares his days with his wife, Tara, and their three children, Ethan, Penelope, and Abigail, in another small town by a river. Tell us a little more about yourself, Daryl. Were you always determined to be a writer, or did you have other interests when you were younger?
I'm not sure if I was determined to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer. Having said that, I'm not even sure whether I consider myself a writer yet. I don't know if that sounds pretentious or not, but it's always been interesting to me when someone gets, I guess, to call him or herself a writer. What qualifies them as that? Is it just writing every day, having a novel published? Is it just doing the act of writing itself? So I wasn't always determined to be a writer, but I always wanted to be a writer.
And now, after all your studies, you teach and have a family, so when do you find time to write? Is a regular timetable and a deadline important to you?
The regular timetable is very important to me, yes. Before my wife and I had children, I had probably 100 times more hours to work with and got almost nothing accomplished. And since we've had our three beautiful children, I've set up a schedule. It sounds sort of crazy to some people. I write from 4:30 to 6:30 or so in the morning before the kids get up and the day begins. And I try to do that, you know, five or six days a week. It doesn't always happen that way, but that's what my goal is.
Well, I sympathize. I love the early morning. And when I was studying for my MA, for instance, I used to get up and do that because my children were in school then too. So are you teaching as well?
I am, yes. Yeah, I teach at Port Perry High School.
You published All My Sins, your first novel, in 2014 with Now or Never Publishing. And I understand from you that Now or Never Publishing is a Vancouver firm.
Yes, yes. Vancouver.
Tell us about the genesis of the book and how it developed.
Well, I had tried writing a longer project, one that was called The Waters. It was a doorstop. It came in at something like 550 pages. I don't know really who I thought I was trying to write something that long. Probably needed a lot more editing. Any response I got from submitting that manuscript was that it was sentimental and far too long. So I thought, the next time I try and write something, I'll try and do the opposite of that. So this was much shorter. And the third bit of criticism was that it had very little narrative drive. That was a phrase that I heard a lot. So I thought, well, I need to write something with plot. It needs to be far shorter than 550 some odd pages. And it needs to have not so much sentimentality to it. So I thought, well, a lot of English teacher stories are often the English teacher as the inspirational one. So what if I wrote something about an English teacher who was at least accused of doing some or many things that he probably shouldn't do? And that's where I started.
I see.
So I thought of everything that an English teacher should probably not do, and then I put him in that situation. Not myself.
But he turned out to be a character you could like and get involved with.
Yeah, well, I mean, I liked him as I was hanging out with him for a year or so.
Yes. Okay, well, how about reading us an excerpt from All My Sins?
Certainly. I'll just set up this little excerpt. It comes from about halfway in the novel. The main character's name is Ben Dunn. He is the English teacher who has been accused of a couple of things that he may or may not be guilty of. Before he was an English teacher, he had a band. He was a wannabe rock star, and one of the bandmates' names is Booker. He's the sort of erudite philosopher of the band, and he's now studying in Newfoundland, St. John's, and that is where we pick up Ben here. He has gone to see Booker, and they've had quite a night, and they found themselves overnight in not a hotel, but in St. John's finest establishment. So that's where we are right now. Booker crossed his naked shins, leaned an elbow on the front desk, and clasped his hands. Booker and Dunn, cells 5 and 6, checking out. The woman at the desk didn't look at us, and she didn't smile. Booker patted the pockets of his trench coat. I seem to have misplaced my room key. I don't know if Benjamin here has his. He looked at me. I shook my head, grinned. Nope, he doesn't have his either. I hope that's not a problem. She clacked away on the computer, spun her chair away, and went into another room. When she returned, she had 2 large, transparent bags, sealed. She handed us the bags and directed us to sign our names beside the X's she indicated with her pen, all without looking at or speaking to us. The bed was comfortable enough, but the rooms were a little drafty and the food somewhat bland. Now, I do have to say the service personnel, present company excluded, of course, was lacking in all class, intellect, and amiability. I'm not sure I'd recommend the place, but we sure do appreciate St. John's Finest putting us up for the night. Booker examined the pen he'd used to sign his name. Mind if I keep this? It is an exquisite pen, so fluid. See, my colleague and I are writing a little screenplay. The ideas really started to flow last night, but neither of us had anything to write with. We weren't allowed writing utensils in our rooms. The concierge took them when we checked in. I'm not blaming him, mind you. I do understand there was a distinct possibility we'd have stabbed ourselves with them in the middle of the night, or more likely still, we may have added to the graffiti on the walls, the presence of which suggests one of 2 things. 1, that the no-pen rule is new, or 2, previous boarders were able to sneak pens in by squeezing them between their buttocks. I should have thought of that. At any rate, I have to say, some of the writing our predecessors managed to leave for us was quite thought-provoking and served as excellent bedtime reading. He put the pen down on the counter and made a square with his thumbs and index fingers. He drew his head back, closed an eye, and pretended to line up a shot with the woman at the desk as the focal point. Yes, I definitely see a part in our film for you, the sexy policewoman, an Elmore Leonard-type character, like Karen Sisko, hard-nosed when she has to be, with a soft spot for gentleman cons. She reached out and took the pen. Booker put one hand on his hip, touched his chin. No to the pen. Okay, I understand. But listen, do you have a card or something? You know, so we can get in touch when the script is finished and casting begins. As she spun her chair away, I thought I might have seen her smile a little, but I couldn't be sure. I took Booker by the arm and walked him towards the main entrance. He didn't resist. Before stepping into the revolving door, he called one last time over his shoulder. Okay then, Karen, we'll see you on set. When we walked outside, I ripped into my personals bag, pulled on my toque and hoodie, laced my shoes, undone as I was, and pocketed my wallet. Booker had nothing in his bag but the shoelaces from his boots, his ID, and a scarf. He tore it open, shoved the laces and the ID in his trench coat pocket, and wrapped the scarf stylishly about his neck. I know a place, he said, and began to walk with unwavering purpose, that serves Irish coffee before noon. I convinced him to stop at a surplus store along the way. I bought him a pair of pants, a sweater, and a toque. I bought myself a coat. There was a deal on gloves. I bought 2 pair. Outside, we slid the gloves on and batted them together in unintentional unison. There, I said, like new men. More like surplus men. I laughed. Yes, unnecessary, excessive, redundant. You're forgetting spare. Yes, spare. Spare is better. We walked, snow crunching under our boots, and breathed in the cold, crisp air. Booker put on his best Eliot, and I smiled at myself as he recited the spur-of-the-moment revision. We are the spare men, we are the abundant men, walking together, headpiece filled with barley, alas. Our dried throats, when we cough together, are like desert ash, or elephant skin, or burnt-out grass in July's dry field. This is the way the day begins, this is the way the day begins, this is the way the day begins, not with a bang, but a glimmer. The place Booker took me was full of people who looked the way I felt, and all of a sudden I didn't feel so bad. Some of the guilt was gone, some of the headache was gone, some of the regret and the yearning to undo the things I knew I could not undo were gone. I felt better. Where a man is everything. Booker put 2 fingers in the air as he sat. Soon there were 2 steaming mugs in front of us, followed shortly by 2 plates of food. I've always loved the name Bangers and Mash. It sounds so wrong, but tastes so good. I nodded, closed my eyes with another mouthful of the hot Irish coffee. Warmth all the way down. We ate in near silence, the food settling in our stomachs the way a welcome snowfall covers the muck and grime of a recent and unwanted thaw. Everything was good again. So, in the case where one man might wish to crush another man, I grinned, wiped my mouth, and leaned forward on the table. Here's what the crushing man should do. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Daryl. Now we'll take a short break.